people gotta learn how to lose, man. You can't be fighting and stuff just because you lost a game. You know, all that fighting, we had 60 minutes, we had four quarters to do all that fighting. And now people want to talk and fight. That's wrong. You know, it's just bad for the game. Classless, in my opinion.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
War correspondent Pat Forty, thank you for your service.
Russ Dellinger.
Free the joke.
And SI's Pat Forty.
There was tampering going on. Tampering.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and I got to start with a serious, very serious subject. This incident, aftermath of the Ohio State-Michigan game. Ugly, disappointing, chaos, the lack of discipline, the over-emotion, the panic that led to a lack of execution that, you know, quite honestly reflected the Buckeyes play all day. I'm just not happy with a situation where an Ohio State police officer unloads pepper spray and only gets a glancing blow on Pat Forty. You had your shot, man.
A lot of people wish he would have gotten me with a direct hit.
Second-hand pepper spray, Pat. You're easy to find. They should have right in the grill. Come on. I back the blue. Yeah, you got a tough job, but come on, man. You had your shot at Pat Forty. Pepper spray him right in the face. You could have just said it was the fog of war, man. It was the fog of war.
How do you miss this nose? It's that big. Come on.
Pat. War correspondent Pat Forty, thank you for your service, telling us the truth from the middle of the brawl.
It was something. It was something, let me tell you. I really didn't get hit in the eyes, maybe because I was wearing glasses, but it doesn't taste good. I can tell you that.
No.
I mean, it's pretty rancid, pretty acidic and acrid. There were people doubled over all over the place, and I don't know who was doing the spray, and I saw people with sheriff jackets on. I don't know, you know, who they represented, but they were just firing away. Players, coaches, any random passerby, and yes, a few media people were walking out going, "Pep, oh, what the hell is that?" Yeah. College football.
We had our chance, Ross. We had our chance.
Yeah, I know. Shucks.
Unbelievable scene down there. We're going to talk playoff. We're going to talk these other games, but it starts and possibly ends at some point with Ohio State, Michigan. Start off, great win for Michigan. Congratulations to Sharon Moore and those players. Nobody believed in you, truly. Biggest point spread in, I don't know, decades in this game. They enter 6 wins, 5 losses. They have no Colson Loveland. They have no Will Johnson. Donovan Edwards gets hurt. They've got a quarterback who we've talked about, Davis Warren, who's a great story because he overcame cancer as a high schooler, and Jim Harbaugh on a whim and a recommendation gave him a walk-on spot, and he's playing because of a total disaster of, like, player procurement. They didn't have a quarterback. He throws completes 9 passes for 62 yards and throws 2 picks, and they win. His longest pass went to a receiver named Peyton O'Leary, a former walk-on, who he had 8 receptions the whole year, and originally was going to play college lacrosse at UMass. That was his original college sports plan. The defense was unbelievable. Ohio State was shut out in the second half. No points. No first downs after 5:59 in the third. Jeremiah Smith, their incredible receiver. He's a freshman, but at this point, it doesn't matter. Only 2 targets in the second half, none in the fourth quarter. He had 1 catch for 3 yards in the third quarter. That was it. Ohio State has a $20 million roster. Could not move the ball. Seemed fluxum that it got like the whole game, their whole strategy as a program fell apart because it got windy in November. Missed field goals. And too many men on the field after a timeout gives Michigan a first and goal and allows them to burn more clock in Penn State and Ohio State timeouts. Pat, you were there. I watched in disbelief. I spent the whole game going, yeah, Ohio State, they'll get it clicking. They'll get it clicking. The final drive by Ohio State, they gained 1 yard. They don't even throw the ball downfield practically. I think this was the worst coaching job I can recall. I cannot recall a worse job for a single game than what Ryan Day put out yesterday at Ohio Stadium. There's literally no excuse to lose this game 13-10. It's not like somebody from Michigan just like, I don't know, maybe Edwards steps back in and has like four long touchdown runs or like somebody. This was just a disaster. Booze, the whole thing. What in the world happened down there, war correspondent?
No, it was a complete 100% utter disaster, meltdown, debacle for Ohio State. You cannot, I think you're right, Dan. I mean, I am trying to remember somebody choking a game worse than Ohio State did there. That was brutal. Three touchdown favorite at home in a game you've been pointing to win for a year. And you have the demonstrably, undeniably better team. And you lose straight up. It just, I mean, it was ugly. And I wrote about, we talked about last week about the kind of the almost cringy Ryan Day quote about the toll of the rivalry on his team and on his family. And I stood on the sideline by his daughters. I just walked down, you know, with a little more than 2 minutes left. And I looked to my left and it's like, oh my gosh, these poor teenage girls are crying their eyes out. Oh, and then you're like, oh, I think I know who they are. And then you see the name tags. It's like, oh no, it's Ryan Day's daughters. And it's just so miserable. It was painful to look at. It really was. The game isn't even over. They have not lost at that point, but they can see it. They can feel it. They know what's going to happen. And you could just kind of just seeing it crushing them. And that's what's happened to Ryan Day. I mean, this rivalry has crushed him as a coach. He's a good coach. He's a winning coach. He cannot coach against Michigan and probably shouldn't coach against Michigan anymore, but that's a whole other topic. It was stunning. Like the crowd, we've been down there, right? When they're losing when on that stadium field, Dan, you and I were down there 2 years ago, the game was already out of hand and people were yelling stuff. This, it was like complete shock until it was over. And then I've never heard a college team get booed that hard. I mean, it was vicious. It was vicious. It went from shock to anger at the flip of a switch. And then the fight started, which we'll get to that too. But holy moly.
Yeah, I was kind of like Dan. As you're sitting watching it on TV, you're kind of waiting for Ohio State to turn it on and take the lead and kind of run away with it and put it away. They have so many offensive weapons. You're just kind of waiting for that to happen. And it never happened. And we kind of talked about it, like Dan opened all season, about the pressure and the intensity around Ryan Day and how this didn't seem very fun this season, and maybe folks weren't having a lot of fun there, and can't imagine it's fun right now. And I was looking at, you know, we talked about Ryan Day's record quite a bit. You know, he's got 10 losses in six seasons, six and a half, or six and three, one quarter or one third of a season. 10 losses in four have been to Michigan. If you boil it down to regular season, I think it's more like maybe six losses or seven losses, and four of those to Michigan. It's kind of unbelievable, you know. And when an opponent gets kind of, you hear about it like in your head sort of thing, and it's a cliche often used. It's all mental sort of thing. But this is like another level of in your head, it feels like.
Yeah, I think there's a few things here. This one is particularly egregious, and this is why I just never thought Michigan could win this game. The talent differential, but Ryan Day doesn't have bad losses. He may not have great wins, but he doesn't have bad losses. This is by far the worst team Ryan Day's ever lost to. Urban Meyer would throw up terrible performances against a Purdue and things like that. And I think, Pat, I put my point of, like, this is the worst coaching job. Obviously, like, there's been 40-point, you know, margin of spreads of, like, bigger upsets. But those games are, like, you don't know what you're getting into. This is, you spent 365. You have staffers that just break down Michigan tape. That's all they do, right? Everything's about this game. And to go in with this game plan, I think he's just so rattled about how to beat Michigan. There's this aspect of Ryan Day that feels very performative when it comes to toughness. He's not from Ohio. He's from New Hampshire. He's a small college quarterback. He's now the head coach. And it feels like he sometimes just overcompensates to try to tell the Ohio State fans how much he cares about this rivalry. And it's just like his language doesn't feel, I'm sure it's genuine. He's obsessed with it, but it's not in a healthy manner or a organic manner about how much. And it's almost like he's scared to be like, yeah, it's just a game, or even in a hint. I've always found they're kind of fun, but it's just sort of odd. Like, we don't say the word Michigan. We can't say the word.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, do they ever like try to quiz him? Like, Lansing is the capital of? Like, what's if he's on Jeopardy? What if he's on, like, Celebrity Jeopardy? What would he do? Does he say Michigan State? I don't know. Like, what? I can't say the word Michigan. We cross out all the M's. Like, we literally have people running around town with all this tape. Like, best thing you could be is a red tape salesman, scarlet tape salesman in Columbus. That guy's got, like, a house in Tuscany. He makes so much money off this, like, cross out the M thing. I can't say it. The team up north, our rival, just the bitterness. It's so unbelievably over the top. And again, we'll get to the brawl, but I feel like it plays out in that. Like, okay, now we're mad. You're going to plant your flag. Well, were you mad when they were beating your... It consumes them. And I think he went into this game, and the great stat of this game, right, is 23 straight years now, whoever rushes for more yards wins the game. It's the Woody Hayes stuff. We play in the North Atlantic.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. You can't throw the ball. We play at noon. It's always gray. It's always, so you might be a little snowy. It's the weather's never good. And so you can't have this pyrotechnic offense. You got to win this thing in the trenches. This is Ohio State and Michigan. This is how it is. Always has been. And so he goes in with this game plan. I don't know if Chip Kelly has now succumbed to this. Like, they brought in, they hired Chip freaking Kelly off a head coaching job in a Big Ten school, UCLA, to be the offensive coordinator and call the plays. And it was a terrible game plan. Like, what happened to him? Come on, Chip. You're better than this. And so they were like, we're going to run the ball because we have to win the running game. And they couldn't run the ball. And Michigan had 174, and I think Ohio State at 77 or whatever, something like that. It's about 100 more yards. Michigan's like, go ahead, keep running. We got Mason Graham, buddy. Keep running right at him. We are going to hit you, right? Howard's running. Boom. Oh, he gets knocked out of the game. Who knows? You've got wide receivers everywhere and a suspect defensive backfield for Michigan. You are not, like I said, Jeremiah Smith doesn't even get the ball. Like, you've got this weapon. I don't care if you're running jet sweeps on some of these guys. All the NFL players, but it was like, no, we got to run the ball. Well, you're playing right into Michigan's hands, and you're performatively tough, but you can be as tough as Michigan, or you can win a battle in the trenches. It's not like they're like superhuman, but that's not what you want to try to do. After the game, I watched his press conference, and he talked at one point about, I think, remember last year, the criticism? I guess this was it. Each year there was an excuse, right? Well, you know, Aiden Hutchinson, and eventually Michigan's going to win one. Okay, boss, you know, big game. And And then the defense wasn't good. And it's all Connor Stallions is cheating. And then last year it's, I should have gone for it on fourth down in the first half. And there was always like some small thing. And then this one, there's just no excuse. This is why I thought he'd win. Cause even if Ryan Day got nervous, they always win against bad teams. And this is not a good team. But he sits there at one point and brings up on his own why he didn't go for it on fourth down from his own 21 on the second to last drive of the game. And he goes, I felt like we were too far back in the red zone. Like, no kidding. No one is asking why you didn't in a tie ball game. Why would you go? But he brought it up. And I swear it's in his head. Like, well, last year you guys criticized me for this, for not going for it at midfield at the end of the first half and trying this long field goal that missed. Now I'm answering for that. It's like a boomerang. Like, I think he's just so out of sorts in this game. He doesn't know which way's up when he normally does. And normally, like, a 6-5 team, we don't lose 6-5 teams at Ohio State. We might lose to Georgia. We ain't losing these guys.
No, I mean, I think you're absolutely right that he's way overthinking this game. And the running aspect is part and parcel of that, maybe the best example of it. Because he said several times in that press conference, you know, we couldn't run the ball. We didn't win the running game. We have to win the running game. It's like, just because that was the way it was for many years in a row, that doesn't mean you have to play that way this time. And it was just stubbornly like, we've got to run the ball better than they do, even though you are playing into their hands and away from some of your best players. I mean, their running backs are really good, but their running game hasn't been great. Their offensive line's been banged up. And you do have Mason Graham in the middle there. And I want to mention him because I watched him struggle off the field way after everyone else at halftime. Like, he was moving slow, and I'm like, that dude didn't play in the second half. And he came out, and he sacked up and played very well. Sat out some plays. He played the first series, and then he sat out for a while, but he was in there in the fourth quarter clogging up that middle. And, you know, they just kept continuing to ride a run there. And the other part of that, I think, was overreacting to Will Howard. Maybe it wasn't an overreaction because Will Howard was bad. All right, he was not good. And he threw two bad interceptions, as did Davis Warren. The quarterback playing this game was bad. But I think they were too scared to let Will Howard throw the ball. I think it was this obsession with running, and then they got scared that Howard was going to make mistakes. Whatever, the combination just snowballed on them until they were paralyzed.
Dan mentioned it, but, you know, Jeremiah Smith, I think, got zero targets in the fourth quarter and maybe just one or two in the third quarter. Two in the third quarter, two in the second half for your – you know, arguably your best player and the best player, best receiver, or one of the best receivers in the country. It is. It's a shocking kind of game plan. And Ohio State, we've seen it against Oregon and Nebraska and even to an extent, Indiana. They have not run the ball consistently well. They haven't. I mean, they've ground out some of these victories late by running the ball, Penn State, Indiana. But consistently through over the course of the game, it's not like they're opening these huge holes and have run the ball really well. We despite the backs that they have, right? We haven't necessarily seen that. So it was kind of a head scratching sort of game plan there. And then, you know, and I know we want to talk about the fight and the fights in general to segue over. It's like this whole mental, you know, they're in our head sort of thing, then just erupts clearly at the end of the game at midfield, which our man, Mr. Forty, was caught in the middle of. But it's just so obvious, you know, what's going on here for Ohio State and how mentally. And maybe that's what – maybe the part of the game plan, Dan, was overthinking it, right? Overthinking the game plan. It seems like it's between the ears here is a big issue.
Final drive, it didn't even seem like Will Howard had the confidence anymore to throw the ball downfield. Like, you got 48 seconds. You got to let it rip. He's throwing it out of bounds. There's a 1 yard gain. Like, it was like, they're not going anywhere. Like, you got to throw the ball. Like, you got to risk it. Like, last year, Kyle McCord, yeah, he got picked. So what? At least he was trying. Like, he got hit while he threw it in the final drive, but it's like he's throwing the ball. He's pushing the ball downfield. Will Howard looked terrified. And it's, does that intensity from the head coach and the crowd bleed into the players? How couldn't it? Like, that is a cauldron of nerves.
I do think it bled over even to Chip Kelly, who knows how to coach football and to scheme up a game plan.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that they were kind of put into a box, you know, there of this is how we have to call the game. I mean, remember, Chip Kelly schemed the hell out of Penn State. Where was that?
Yeah, just quickly on Michigan, because this is a great win for them. And this is the worst Michigan team probably Brian Day is going to get. That's why I need to win this one. Michigan's like their NIL, they're fired up. They're recruiting. They got Bryce Underwood coming. He's going to be a freshman. I would imagine a massive transfer portal coming for Michigan. I'm certainly like right after the game, like, Sherrone Moore's on the TV on Fox being like, this is why you come here, right? He knows every kid in the country's watching, including current players, right? And Ohio State is in the same problem that Michigan was last year. They're going to go into the playoffs, right? So you have to be very careful with your portal because you can't scare off some of your depth that you need to win the playoff. If you bring in an offensive lineman that the second string offensive lineman says, hey, wait, he's going to start over me next year. Maybe I should hit the portal. How do you keep your team together going into the playoff? This is the penalty, if you will, of being successful. And you've got everyone saying, is Ryan Day going to be there next year? So Ohio State's going to lose a ton of talent. They're going to lose talent like Michigan did last year. Now they have better recruiting base, but this flips a little bit in terms of roster talent next year. I don't know that Michigan will ever have more talent than Ohio State, but Ohio State needs to reload, and the portal does not favor the teams that are already in the playoff, let alone ones where a coach is getting speculated that he might leave for whatever reason. So, but great job for Michigan. And if you're a Michigan fan, that was, I don't know. That might have been more satisfying than any of them. I couldn't imagine any more satisfying last year for them, but there it is. Okay, the post-game brawl. The flags, this was big. It was fight night in college football. We had a brawl there. We had a whole list of them. Arizona State planted a trident or whatever they got there.
Pitchfork, I guess.
Pitchfork, right. Yeah, they did their thing. There was the Florida State flag. There was more.
North Carolina State was a big one.
Yep, North Carolina State placed a flag. There was a fight in the Iron Bowl. There almost was a flag planting at Texas and Texas A&M, but Steve Sarkisian stopped it, said we don't need to do that, which is kind of funny because his team planted a flag at Michigan Stadium earlier in the year. So it wasn't a big deal then. Michigan had two flags planted on them this year, Texas and Oregon. Now they planted a flag. Michigan says they're innocent. Michigan's innocent, but they sure do. Michigan may be innocent, but they sure do end up in a lot of brawls. Like, for the guys Michigan that it's never their fault. Tunnel brawl. I mean, they're always in the mix. They kind of always... It's the hockey guy. It's not the enforcer. It's like my man Brad Marchand. Like, what? Like, you're not just seem to be in the mix a lot here. Anyway, Pat, were you offended by the flag planting? And did the Buckeyes, Brian Day said, we have a bunch of prideful guys and they weren't just going to let a flag get planted at midfield. He also stood there and didn't try to break up the fight. Did you see that?
He was paralyzed. It was like he was broken by then.
Like, you're the head coach. You got to get in the middle.
I don't think he could react at all. I think his mind was shot by the fact they lost the game.
Yeah, Tom Mars, Jim Harbaugh's attorney, pointing out the sportsmanship violation and Ryan Day standing by and allowing it to happen. Should Tony Petitti step in? Ultimate trolling. Yeah. And then he approved of it after the game. What is going on? What? Oh my God. Yeah, Mars. Gift to football.
I think it's, you know, in an ideal world, win with class, lose with class. There was no class there on either side. I mean, I thought it was embarrassing. Michigan has this great win and probably takes the celebration too far. And then Ohio State way overreacts and gets the excuse then to go start a fight because Michigan has offended them. I think we probably need to have a discussion in the sport about road protocols if you win a game and planting flags and what that outcome may be. And Texas planting a flag at Michigan is not like Michigan planting a flag in Ohio Stadium. This is different. See, the people have tried to equalize them. No, you can't. This is not the same thing. Texas, if Texas had planted the flag at Texas A&M, guess what would have happened? Probably the same damn thing. And I wrote in the column, Ohio State's best move would have been to tuck your head and get off the field. You took a whooping. You're not going to redeem yourself by going out there and getting into a brawl. And I think that they overreacted. The cops overreacted. Everybody overreacted. It was complete mayhem. You know, I think that this to me, given the context of this game and this situation, it's just like, everybody settle the flip down. Is it possible?
No.
Clearly it's not possible. But, I mean, I'm sitting there, I'm watching Ryan Day's children crying, and then I'm watching those two teams brawling, and I was like, what the hell are we doing here? What are we doing?
Having fun, Pat.
The Ryan Day. Yeah. Just good old
extracurricular activities.
Yeah.
A bunch of student athletes, you know, getting after it on a Saturday.
That's right.
That's it.
That's right.
That's it.
Yes.
Go tell Ryan Day's daughters how fun that was.
Yeah. The flag planting across the country was something to see. I guess it's the new thing. You know, that we've obviously seen it before, but man, yesterday, I don't know that I've seen so many in one day and elicit the kind of reaction from teams. It all kind of had a similar reaction. You know, Pat, you mentioned Texas A&M. I think that was close to about to happen at Kyle Field, and Steve Sarkisian ran over there and got his guys off of the midfield logo and ushered them into the locker room after the game. So he was trying to prevent, obviously, something like that from happening. I found it bizarre too, Dan, that Ryan Day was not getting in the middle of all that. You know, you saw a lot of coaches yesterday get in the middle of that and try to break up their guys and pull them back. And Day really did look like Pat said, kind of frozen and paralyzed, just stunned at what happened. And I think there's a video of him standing next to players during the alma mater, I guess, or whatever they play at the end.
Yeah.
You know,
Carmen, Ohio. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're singing, and then players just, in the middle of it, right, start running. And he kind of looks back, and then at some point he asks somebody, what happened? You know, he just kind of stood there. You could feel the paralyzing pain, I guess, that he was, he's going through. I don't know how he felt getting up this morning. But I wouldn't want to,
not sure he is up,
be around
to sleep in. I don't know if he slept, probably at the office. Okay. As for the flag planting, obviously college football needs to pass a rule. No more flag planting. Okay. Or trident. We do not need spears on the field. Like, the flag's bad enough. Okay. I was like, oh, Arizona State. All right. UTEP's got a shovel. I think they might've done something. First off, you can't plant it into that. It's not grass.
Yeah, right. It doesn't work.
This isn't Iwo Jima. Enough with the flag. All right. I'm fine. Good God. It doesn't work, but whatever. Listen, a couple things to this. A, it doesn't matter to me. I like the flag planting personally, but obviously this is not a great thing. I don't care if they brawl. I don't, whatever. This is everyone's hyped up. I don't blame the Michigan players for being fired up. I don't blame the Ohio State players. Ohio State players should have walked off the field, just said we took it. I'm kind of on that side of like, if same with the Florida State kids or whatever, if you're the idea that this is a sacred logo, come on. But I just don't care. I see a brawl and I'm excited. I'm like, all right, let's go. If I'm Steve Sarkisian, I don't want to brawl because I don't need anybody getting hurt. It's stupid. You're punching each other in the freaking helmets. Not a good idea, but whatever. They want to fight. I am not offended one bit. I don't really care. Ryan Day not breaking up the thing is, I'm certainly not going to take Tom Mars's opinion that he should be suspended, but like, what the hell, man? What are you in charge of this thing? Like, I don't really care, but how the hell does a head coach stand there and just let it go on? Like,
I'm telling you, I do not believe he was.
You have
he was
to
even
be
occupying his body at that point. I'm not excusing it.
I know, but you have to be.
I'm not excusing it.
Like, you have to be in charge of your body.
Yes, you do. You have to be in. You have to be in charge of your team.
You're in charge. You're making $10 million a year. You're in charge of things. You're standing there like, I guess there's this big. I mean, we're getting pepper sprayed out there. Guys are getting hit with hell. And I'm just like, what? Like, what is this? That's the leader of your program? Like, I don't want to make too much of it, but like, this is bizarre. Every other coach in the country is like, I mean, hell, even Napier's and Norvell are getting into it. Like, well, at least join in the fight. Like, you can't just I don't know what you gotta try to break it up. Like, this is chaos. You are the head coach. You gotta break it. I don't know. I don't care about the fighting, all of that. I think listening, I love Gus Johnson. He calls a great game, but listening to the Fox guys be like, this is a disgrace. Dude, next year's promos for the game, you're going to show someone getting pepper sprayed. I mean, like, we all play a role in this. The backyard, bro, it's death. It's the shootout. I'm part of it. I love it. Hype it up. This is the biggest game. The amount of intensity and trash talk put on these players, and then they, at the end of the game, don't act all of a sudden like, oh, great game, gentlemen. Let's go study. Hey, you taking chemistry also? This is I am also. What is your professor teaching you? Let's go to the library after the game and talk it over. That's not how it works. We can't hype these guys up like this. I mean, I can't guarantee it, but I would bet. I have a high probability that there will be a pepper spray, at least 1 second of someone getting pepper sprayed in next year's promos on why we should watch Ohio State, Michigan. So don't sit there and
for a minute.
They spent all weekend, it's 45 million people watching the Cowboy game, and there's promos on this unbelievable rivalry, right? Like, whatever. They fought. It's stupid. Don't fight. College kids do stupid stuff. This does not offend me at all. Ryan Day, you can't just stand there, though. That is one of the most bizarre things I've ever seen. I've never in all the different brawls, the Malice in the Palace, and you had coaches trying to like stop like 7-foot players from going into the stands. Like, I'm going to try to grab Ron Artest. Well, you should be able to do something here. That was terrible. So, but more fights.
One other element here of the Ohio State situation, and I think it is time for Ryan Day to find a new job. I think this job has consumed him. The Michigan element of this job has consumed him and his family to an unhealthy degree. The fans don't want him there. He's a great coach. He can find another job. I think he should look for one. But guess what? You might just go win a national championship. This, you know, you got to ride this season out. And they're in limbo right now. And it may be a limbo that ends with you win national championship, you're not getting rid of him. So what does Ohio State do with Ryan Day? What does Ryan Day do with Ryan Day?
Well, the thing about that, Pat, is, as you know, there might not be a ton of great jobs open. There might not be a ton of power conference jobs open at all. And number one, and number two, as you mentioned, right, they'll almost certainly still be in the playoffs with their resume, and they might have to go on the road for a first round game. Maybe at like Notre Dame, which would be pretty incredible. You can imagine. But yeah, I mean, there's still a shot there, especially with this roster that we talked about all season, that they do make a December, January run.
It's totally a shot because, you know, when they almost won a national title under Ryan Day, when they almost beat Georgia, is when they got humiliated at home 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Michigan, and they don't got to see Michigan again. And they got it. They absolutely can win this.
The boogeyman is gone.
Yeah. Good news. He's not in it. So you got to play someone else. They're going to have to win four games. I wouldn't rule it out. How's he get another job? For what? NFL coordinator? Like, he can't. Let's say North Carolina. Okay. They're open. They want to hire Ryan Day. Ryan Day wants a job. You think North Carolina's going to sit there with no coach? Like, Ryan Day would have to walk away right now from a playoff team, or he's got to wait till he loses, which the first chance that could be is December 20th. If you win that, it's not till early January. The whole portal goes through. The whole recruiting cycle goes through. How does he get another? This is what happened to Michigan with Harbaugh. Harbaugh had to wait until he was done to then go to the NFL. And so he doesn't take a job until late January. Nick Saban, you see in a little bit with Alabama here too. Nick Saban had to wait to retire. And then the calendar's so screwed up, you're behind the eight ball, either a lot like Michigan or a little like Alabama. So, like, what job could he even get? I think they're stuck with each other because the way this thing plays out.
Maybe. I mean, it's difficult. The playoff has made this increasingly difficult if you're in it. But if I'm North Carolina and I could get Ryan Day, I'd wait 6 weeks.
But can Ryan Day sit there and say, with a wink and a nod, and try to coach his team if everyone's like, dude, you leaving for North Carolina?
I mean, I don't know, because the longer North Carolina stays open, the longer everybody would put two and two together, I'm sure. Yeah, but I don't know. I don't know. It's a tough situation. But I
agree with you. He just needs to go do that. Because he's a good coach. Although he's a good coach when he's got better players than the other team. Except for yesterday.
Yeah, he gets better players. That's right, another reason I would hire him.
Yeah. We got to get to the playoff. We'll do it right after this. We're going to talk playoffs a ton, but briefly, this is how I see it. Tell me where I'm wrong, gentlemen. Big Ten is going to get four teams in. Oregon, and by the way, congratulations on the Oregon Ducks. They took out a lot of vengeance on Washington Saturday, and they're the only team in the country that actually won 12 games.
Yeah.
Not easy going undefeated. Ducks did it. They haven't got a lot of attention because that's what happens sometimes when you're number one. They're about to get a ton of attention. But great season for Oregon. Penn State is going to play Oregon in the Big Ten championship game. Penn State is in. James Franklin had to defend running up the score, quote unquote, another thing I hate when people complain about that. He said he was playing his second and third stringers. Tough break, Maryland. Stop him. That was the controversy there. Ohio State is still in this playoff. Even with the bad Michigan loss. I think Indiana is in this playoff.
I agree.
Four from the Big Ten. SEC, three, guaranteed. Texas and Georgia are both in. Georgia, boy, it was close. Eight overtimes. And a lot of night. The missed call on the targeting on that fumble by King. That was one of the worst missed calls I've ever seen. He got speared directly in the head and then dropped the ball. But Georgia won. Georgia Tech had their chances. We can talk a little about that epic game, but I think Georgia is in. Tennessee is in. And let me say this about the Vols. They had their bad loss, and there's a lot of SEC teams moping and crying and screaming about this and that. They had their bad loss to Arkansas, then they took their mulligan and learned from it. Every other time Tennessee was up against it, They got out of it and won. They beat Florida when it was a tight game. They came back against Vandy. Tennessee earned their way in by winning the games they were supposed to win that Alabama, Ole Miss, and South Carolina couldn't do.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No doubt. I mean,
and they're sitting pretty.
They're sitting pretty
at home,
as they should be.
Not playing in the SEC championship game. A week of rest, and will probably host a playoff game.
It's going to be fantastic, and they earned it. Great job by Tennessee. You get one mulligan. You don't get three of them. Like, so, I mean, some of the whining coming out of the SEC. Enough. Notre Dame is in. Great victory yesterday at USC. Yep. They're going to host. I don't know if they're going to be the sixth seed.
South Bend playoff game.
Right.
We'll in mid-December.
Mid-December, South Bend. Beautiful. Put some little snowflakes on the dome. Eight. That's eight. ACC champion is in. It's either going to be SMU or Clemson. Big 12 champ is in. It's either Arizona State or Iowa State. The Mountain West champion is in. It's either Boise or UNLV with a long shot bid by the AAC champion if it is Army. I think if there is an Army-UNLV debate, I give a long shot chance to Army. But I think that the Mountain West champion will win out on that. And thoughts on that?
Yeah, UNLV has too many good wins over power conference teams, right? They've got a couple over the Big 12. I think that probably pushes them ahead of Army, you know?
Yeah.
So I think you nailed it. I think that's a good rundown of where we are.
UNLV's
Clemson,
only-
you mentioned the ACC championship game, right? The Clemson bid stealing
is the big
kind of story, right? They could take a spot.
So also UNLV's only two losses to Boise and to Syracuse, which is a nice team. So I think that I don't think Army has
a back and forth game. That was a good game.
I don't think Army has a path, but I can't totally rule them out. So that's 11 bids.
Right.
So we have, these are the contenders for the last spot. SMU, if they lose to Clemson, if Clemson takes SMU, does SMU stay in? I think they are the most likely scenario to stay in, to get the 12th spot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then you tell me, gentlemen, there's Miami, who could not survive Syracuse, lost some bizarre coaching choices, as always, had a huge lead on Syracuse, let him come back. Shout out to Kyle McCord, who was deemed not good enough at Ohio State to be the quarterback. Went 26 of 36, 380 yards, 3 TDs against Miami on Saturday. Quote from Kyle after being asked about that and the Buckeyes' inept offense, quote, "Everything comes full circle," end quote. That's a flag plant, verbal flag plant.
You just took my small sample Heisman, damn it.
Well, you can find another one. Well, you can go on about him. Kyle McCord deserves all the stars, so keep it.
No, you just wrapped it perfectly. Damn it.
Listen, you're still drunk on the pepper spray. All right, now we have, you got Miami, South Carolina, who beats Clemson, Alabama, who beats South Carolina, Ole Miss, who beats South Carolina, Boise State, if they lose to UNLV. Their two losses would be UNLV and Oregon. Those are the only teams I see as a contender for the last spot. Who do you like, Pat?
Yeah, I mean, truly, it's like, can somebody please just step up and take this 12th spot? I prefer Miami out of that group. Good season in a league that has been good, and they don't have three losses they're trying to excuse away. They got two of them, but they're both two good teams. They don't have a slew of great wins, but they did win at Louisville, and I think that was a good win. They won in dominant fashion at SEC team Florida to start the year. And I would take them at 10-2. The question, I mean, there are a lot of permutations on this that could get fascinating. I mean, if Clemson beats SMU, does one ACC team knock out another? Do we have an ACC on ACC crime? Does Clemson knock out Miami, but SMU stays in? Or does Clemson knock out SMU and Miami stays in? My suspicion is SMU is going to be in, win or lose. And then Clemson could slide in at 12, or maybe it's Miami. I would prefer that to seeing a three-loss SEC team in there.
Yeah, what makes this difficult, Well, first of all, you know, Clemson win can actually make it a little easier in a way on the committee. They could just, like Dan said, they could just leave in SMU. If it's not too ugly of a game, you would think they would just leave in SMU, and then you'd have your field. It wouldn't be great for the ACC, right? Clemson, they probably wouldn't get a bye. They'd probably be the last champion in potentially. But it would make it easier potentially for the committee. What makes it hard is, yeah, if SMU wins and then you have that one spot for what we're talking about, it's hard to put in any of those SEC, those three. They're kind of bunched in a group, those three SEC teams, Alabama, Ole Miss, and South Carolina. Because Ole Miss went to South Carolina and won big. And Alabama probably has the best resume of any of the three, though. But South Carolina is probably the playing the best of anybody right now. So it's almost like you got to keep them together in a way, and it's hard to put one in over the other. Although I think the one that I think most people would put in is Alabama because of their resume and their couple of their wins. But it is hard to see them putting in Alabama over Miami. I think Miami probably gets the nudge, but you know it's. What's interesting, I always look at, you know, you look at some of the betting odds coming out of who's going to make the CFP. And of course, right now, Alabama's favored to get in the CFP over Miami. Now, again, that's just Vegas, but that's where we are.
We have seen Alabama magically rise over an ACC team before, I believe, in the playoff situation.
Yeah.
Last year.
Zombie tide. So. Zombie tide's never out. I don't the betting odds are, I hate the betting odds, but it's interesting. I'm not criticizing your thing, but like, who the heck, they once said Garrett Nussmeier was a bigger favorite to win the Heisman than Travis Hunter. they're also predictive, and I don't know. Anyway, that's going to be the fight. We can talk about it later, but I'll go back to one thing. Let the cake bake. We're down. This is what we're down to. And it may sort itself out this weekend.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. Enough with 5 weeks ago, whatever. Oh, my God. How are they going to do this? And you're really going to feel bad if any of these teams are left out? The only two I'd feel sort of bad for is SMU if they lose because they're already in and they have to play a 13th game. Yeah. Or if Boise State loses because they're already in and you lose a 13th game. I don't feel bad for the others. It's just like, okay, which flawed team gets in the last spot? And this debate is not that bad. So,
no. We ended up, we went from, you know, 20 teams for 12 spots to now 11 teams for 12 spots.
Yeah, basically.
I don't know who even deserves a 12th spot.
Yeah, that was the kind of the thing people were talking about yesterday, right, on social media, is with the 12 team playoff, there's one big problem. You need 12 teams that are, you know, that are relevant or could win a national title. And that certainly is an issue. One thing I wanted to bring up, if you look at resume stuff and metrics, it is surprising that we're not talking more about BYU comparing their resume to some others like Miami in these SEC programs. It's tough for BYU because they lost the crazy tiebreaker to be left out of their to get into the Big 12 championship game. So they'll be out of that game, and they just seem to not be in the conversation at all. But they're 10-2, and they have probably the best CFP resume of anybody in the Big 12, but they won't be playing in the championship game. So that's an intriguing one. And then you know, there's Illinois as well. You're going to hear Illinois and BYU. They're obviously not in that group that we're talking about, but their resumes aren't that different from some of the ones in the group that we're talking about.
Good point on BYU.
Good point then. That's my bad. Illinois. I get to look at that one. I didn't even a fifth.
Yeah, I can't quite get there with Illinois.
Yeah. The committee has given no respect to Illinois. Right. I mean, they're coming from 23rd after beating Northwestern by 10. I don't see that momentum, but it's an interesting point that they're sort of written off. They have three losses, don't they?
Yes, they do. But two of them are really good teams, Oregon and Penn State, but they also lost at home to Minnesota.
Yeah,
the Minnesota loss is keeping BYU them out, probably. You know, could you imagine if they didn't lose that game? Their resume in Miami right now would be – now, that would be a really tough decision. This, like I said earlier, this all sets up fairly, quote, easy for the committee based on wins and losses of records, you know, because you're comparing Miami with some of these three-loss SEC teams. But – if you had a two-loss bubble team, like if Illinois had hung on and won that game, or if BYU was given or in the Big 12 championship game, you know, and given a little more credit, it would be much tougher.
I think it was very interesting. Texas Tech coach Joey McGuire made this point about enough with this, the Big Ten and SEC are just superior.
Mm.
And his point I'll paraphrase and get to the point part of it that I thought was more impressive, but like the patch doesn't matter on your jersey. SMU wasn't in a major conference last year. They could win the ACC. Oregon, a Pac-12 team, could win the Big Ten. Texas, a Big 12 team, could win the SEC. Like if you can play, you can play. And so the idea that like there's just inherent strength in these other two conferences, not all the way there with them, but it's pretty interesting point. Like this idea that like there's, oh well, it's the Big Ten or whatever. You know,
sure.
Sort of where
that's
we're
at. Yeah. No, I mean that's the SEC is yeah. No, the SEC is using that as the means to promote their three lost teams, and I get the lobbying. I understand it, but we don't have to all buy it because
it's not a bad argument. I mean, that
we,
they have.
We could have a. No, I mean, the SEC has a better inherent strength argument than the Big Ten does because they've won 9 million titles. But I don't think that gets you a noblesse oblige path to a fourth bid that you haven't really earned.
All right. You know, we'd usually do intriguing games to try to get as many topics in here. This is such an epic weekend that we just had. But let's do intriguing results. What stands out from this weekend? What one of these games from anywhere, any topic that you just sat there that you remember this weekend that pops out?
Two things that came out from the same game Friday night. First of all, college overtime is ridiculous. The 8-9 overtime, whatever the hell they played in Georgia Tech. The 2-point showdown. Like this could happen in the playoff. We could end up deciding the national championship with a 2-point showdown. Let's not. Let's fix that. There are a million things, alternatives. We don't have to dive into that now, but it's a good off-season topic for us to bloviate upon. But the other part of it is Georgia is the most bizarre team because they've become casual. Like they play with nonchalance, and I never thought I would see a Kirby Smart team become casual, but this team has. I mean, there are times I don't think their focus is there. There are times their effort isn't even fully there. But then when they have to have it, when they're backed up against the wall, I mean, several games this year they had to win. And this one, several times it looked like they were absolutely going to lose. And they kept pulling it out. Just a wild, crazy showdown there in between the hedges with Georgia Tech. And I know Ross picked them for the lock of the week, and I wanted to pick them. Georgia Tech getting that huge number, but it's just been a strange season with Georgia to watch them. They played a tough schedule. They've got good wins, but there are times when you look at them and it's like, who are you? You have that G on the helmet, but you don't play like Georgia.
It's kind of like Alabama. Georgia's the inconsistency. You just don't know from one week to the other which one you're going to get. The Georgia team that, gosh, just absolutely bludgeoned Texas, or the one that got blown out by Ole Miss or nearly lost to Georgia Tech. Who knows what's come on Saturday in the rematch with Texas. I don't know which one we're going to get. Dan, one of the things that stuck out to me on Saturday wasn't on the field at all. It wasn't a game, actually. It was a coaching move for the second time in a calendar year or so. We saw a head coach at a power conference school leave his school and take a coordinator position at another power conference school. Gus Malzahn leaving UCF to be the offensive coordinator at Florida State. And we saw Chip Kelly do the same thing last year leaving UCLA for Ohio State. If you don't think there are gaps within the power conferences, from the top 20, 25 to everybody else in the power leagues, those two decisions should tell you that there are. And it's kind of a fascinating decision. Mike Norvell and I think Gus Malzahn go way back. And so they are reunited in Tallahassee in an interesting job move.
Can I ask
Pat looks
one
like
question
he has thoughts.
There. I have thoughts. There was tampering going on. Tampering. Right? It's the Wild West. Where's the guardrails? We've got players being approached by other schools. Clearly, this happens while the season is still going on. Mm-hmm. Right? This was all set up. This was done and agreed to. But we go crazy when the players are being tampered with. But here's a head coach who's going to go ahead and take the escape hatch and the sideways move across the state and be the offensive coordinator there. And nobody bats an eye. I don't hear. When are the senators going to weigh in on the guardrails?
Yeah, call Congress.
When are we going to hear them?
Thank you, Pat. Thank you. Yeah, ridiculous. I don't think Gus Malzahn thought he had much of a future at UCF either.
No. Yeah. It was time to go.
Time to go. So,
I mean, and that's a tough spot. You know, they're new to the Big 12, right? New to the power leagues. It's a tough position heading into the rev share world. And I think you're going to see probably more of this. Not only will you see the G5 head coaches move to power conference coordinators, which you've seen a bunch of, but you're going to start seeing these maybe lower resource power league head coaches maybe go do something else.
My head will explode this spring, though, when some congressional hearing and when they try to legislate against tampering. There's no question. Because we have to make it 1965. Yeah, everything is tampering in life. Everything, deal with it. One that stood out to me was this Texas A&M game was just it was a letdown. I mean, before the game, the scene in College Station, you see the guy riding a longhorn with a dog on it.
With a dog.
That's amazing. One of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
He's riding through the A&M campus on a longhorn, which alone would be crazy to me. I don't live deep in the heart of Texas. Clap, clap, clap. But he brought his dog also. So it's a man and his dog on a longhorn. Why bring the dog?
I don't know. Why bring the longhorn?
Longhorn? I guess I kind of get the longhorn more than what the dog too. I got to bring the dog. We got to show our support for the horns. And A&M police reported they just told him to leave campus and he agreed. So where does he go? Does he ride it? Where? What was the end game with this longhorn? A freaking longhorn. People are trying to walk to the stadium and there's a guy on a and he's not, he and a dog. So he's got to hold his dog. Like that could cause problems. Anyway, this is how nuts this game is. And then Texas just sucks the life out of the building, but it's being better. But then spends the entire second half trying to let A&M back in it. They were like the ABC producer, like, oh, hope it's not a blowout. We're going to lose the audience. It's like, we could really use a terrible pick six. Hey, thank you, Quinn Ewers. Boy, we could really use a fumble. Hey, we could use a block punt. Hey, and A&M's like, no, we don't want this game. I had to be a hard day for A&M fans. You waited. You're all ready. Yeah. 14 years in the SEC, A&M's never made it to Atlanta. Texas comes in first year and goes, oh, God. You're never going to hear the end of it from these people.
Right.
Arch Manning comes in and does a run, but how good is Texas? I'm confused. You talk about Georgia. I'm a little confused at Texas. I think they're really, really good. But then at times you're like, what? This A&M team isn't doing it tonight. You should be blowing them out. So odd. It was not how I expected the Texas A&M game to go.
No. I mean, that was, yeah, that was, it was a letdown of a game. I mean, for the game that was billed as the biggest one of the weekend, it just, it did not deliver. Those were two teams that just kind of got through it. I mean, they tried hard, but Texas didn't play very well, and neither did Texas A&M, in my opinion.
All right, we'll be back right after this small sample Heisman, and we'll try to say something nice. All right, they're going to hand out the Heisman soon. The Ashton Jeanty Travis Hunter debate is a good one. It's going to be a good one, and we'll talk about that in depth for later. But we like to hand out the small sample Heisman, get one every week. I would have given it to that Ohio State cop if he had just had better aim. Pepper spray. But, alas, that didn't happen. You had your chance, man. Our highest honor. Would have given it to you, mm-hmm. officer, whatever. Small sample Heisman, who's got one? Ross?
Yeah, I've got one. I've got an odd one, Dan, but it made me laugh. Baylor, by the way, won, I think, their last six games of the regular season to finish 4-8, a crazy midseason turnaround for Dave Aranda. But nobody on the field gets my small sample Heisman. Somebody off the field does. Baylor's stadium operator, McLean at McLean Stadium, during a Kansas field goal earlier in the game, you know, they do the distractions behind the field goal post. Well, the Jumbotron at McLean Stadium is right behind the field goal post where the Kansas was kicking the field goal or attempting the field goal. And they put on the Jumbotron a picture of the Dallas Cowboys AT&T Stadium glare that came in you know, messed with all the Cowboys and a couple weeks ago that went viral. They put the picture of the windows of the stadium with that glare coming through. Field goal, no good, Dan. Missed it. The fake glare got him. It's tremendous.
Glare is so bad.
Tremendous work by the stadium worker.
Travel from Arlington to Waco. And how about Kansas? They knock off everyone and then go to Baylor and like, yeah, we're done here.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, they got rolled.
Yeah, no more mayhem for them to create. My small sample Heisman. I'd mentioned this game last week because it was important where I live, Louisville, Kentucky. It's always very important in basketball, but it's very important in football too. And Louisville had lost, I think it's four in a row, and that was not taken very well. And this year they had to win because they've got a good team, and Kentucky has a bad team. And they dominated them 41-14. Jeff Brohm now has a 1,000% approval rating on the job. But my small sample Heisman goes to a freshman running back, Isaac Brown, that they got out of Florida. And he's been awesome this year. 26 carries, 178 yards, two touchdowns. He's over 1,000 for the year. Has really given the offense balance. And at 8-4 and finally beating Kentucky, Louisville's feeling very good about itself right now.
My small sample Heisman goes to Ohio quarterback Parker Navarro, not Ohio State quarterback, Ohio. 7-for-11 passing, 169, three touchdowns. He also had 11 carries for 110 yards and two rushing touchdowns as Ohio moved to 9-3 in the regular season and clinched a spot in the MAC championship game next week against Miami, Ohio. Navarro was a backup to Curtis Rourke, who left in the transfer portal to go to Indiana, along with some other players, rather than the Ohio program under Coach Tim Albin just bottoming out. Upsteps Navarro and 58 new players on the Ohio roster from high school ranks and transfers. Nine came in from Power Four schools. And they have had an incredible season, and the Curtis Rourke backup proves that he can play. Another good, really good MAC quarterback doing some stuff, and props to Tim Albin. Could be the third consecutive 10-win season at Ohio. He is 59, longtime assistant. Never got his chance.
They lost a lot in the portal.
Lost everybody, and didn't matter. Yeah. Like they win Saturday, yeah. And they're, it was a Friday night, I think. They can win the league and get to 10 wins again, third straight year. This is one of these coaches. We talk about Kurt Cignetti, right? Didn't get his chance. And he's 50. Like, he just was assistant forever over at Ohio. Now he's just killing it. So congrats to the Bobcats, and looking forward to this MAC championship game. All right. We said mean things, mainly about Ryan Day. Can anyone say anything nice? War correspondent 40. You got something? Or Ross, you got something?
Well, I'll say something nice about another coach, Dan. Marshall coach Charles Huff. Yeah, there's been a lot made of his situation at Marshall. He's on the last year, I believe, or has just one more year on his contract, which you never see happen in the world of college athletic, college football specifically. Coaches normally get that at least 3 or 4 year runway there. But there's clearly issues between the coaching staff and the administration if they've not been able to hammer out any kind of extension. But all he did was go into James Madison, win an overtime game with his Thundering Herd Saturday night to move to 9-3, 7-1 in the league, and win the division. And they will play in the Sun Belt Championship game at Louisiana. And he's 31-20, by the way, 20-12. In the conference in his tenure there. And you could see after the game, I watched the overtime periods and then watched the celebration afterward. And you could see on Coach Huff's face all the emotion coming out and maybe the frustration too of his situation there. So give one up there.
Why haven't they extended nice him? About
he beat Notre Coach Dame too. Huff. We don't really know.
Great guy, right?
Yeah, we don't really know.
He's had some good Power 5 wins, including beating Notre Dame, but they haven't had great success in the league, and now this year they win the division and play for the league championship, and so I think it's going to be hard to maintain this skepticism there because they've done it.
So, yeah.
And they won that game with a reverse pass in double overtime.
Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah.
What the heck, man? Come on, Marshall. All right, Pat.
I'm going to say something nice about the Minnesota Golden Gophers. They dominated Wisconsin in the Axe game, the big rivalry game. They went for a period of time where it looked like they just couldn't win that game, like they had been left behind in that competition between them and Wisconsin, and they won the game. They won easily. That was after a heartbreaking loss to Penn State. PJ Fleck gets them to 7-5, winning record yet again in the bigger and certainly tougher Big Ten. They didn't have that just cushy Big Ten West schedule to buoy them. So nice job by the Gophers winning the Axe this year.
I'm going to say something nice about the famed Southwick Jug Trophy. This came up last week and includes UMass's ability to somehow be newsworthy despite never actually winning anything. credit to my alma mater. Always a lot of drama. Always a lot of drama. So apparently here, the collective, the Midnight Ride NIL collective of UMass creates this trophy, the Southwick Jug Trophy. And they had a bean pot at the top from Boston, from like 100-year-old bean pot.
It was great.
And then some Connecticut wood. And they created this thing, and it's going to go to the UMass UConn winner. They've played since 1897. The rivalry dates back. This is the 78th meeting. And UConn won Saturday, 47-42. Spirited game. Used to be a really big game back when they were in like the Yankee Conference, the old like 1AA, and still whatever. It's a big, it's their rivalry game. So they bring out this Southwick jug, and it's all over social media, and it's like, okay, that everyone assumes that's going to be the new trophy. But apparently this was not cleared with the UMass athletic department. I gotta do some investigative journalism on this. Like, there's some work to be done here, but there was total mayhem on Saturday. The word broke. There was a report from a 24/7 site that Both schools had rejected the trophy. They didn't want the trophy to be the official trophy of this thing. Like, there's other people trying to create trophies for this rivalry. Like, if someone wants to do something, go for it. That's me. Why not? And so the trophy was not handed out. And then Jim Mora was asked about this, the UConn coach, at his victorious press conference, about this, the no Southwick jug. Where is it? And he said, this is the report that UConn didn't want it. Is this is 100% false. Mora said, I specifically asked for the trophy at the end of the game, and I was told point blank, you folks, basically UMass, weren't giving it up. Is UMass refusing to hand over the Southwick jug? Stolen valor? What are we doing? Give him the tremendous jug, man. Give him the jug. Let him eat some baked beans out of that thing. Let him drink booze. I don't care what. Give him the jug. What, we got too many trophies?
Not for that matchup, we don't. There's not enough.
The fact anyone cared enough to create a trophy for you, UMass, means just to accept it. Give them the jug. Where is the Southwick jug? Where is it? Who's got it?
See,
hidden this, at the bottom of Puffer's Pond? Where is it?
We need a full Wetzel investigation for the Tuesday podcast.
I have a busy week. I don't need to be wasting my time investigating the Southwick jug. Just send it to Jim Mora. This is embarrassing. 2-10 and we're holding on to the trophy? It's free the Southwick jug. The stupidest story I've ever heard of. We created a trophy and we won't give it? I mean, even their flag, they're planting flags, they're planting spears. There's a huge axe involved in that Wisconsin-Minnesota game. Yet even those players know you have to give the axe to the winning team.
Yes.
You can't hide the axe. Sorry, can't get it. We don't recognize it now. Well, let UConn recognize it. What the hell's going on?
Give him the jug.
At least there wasn't a fight, I guess.
Yeah.
Give him the jug.
Free the Southwick jug. Southwick's this town, this one town that refused to join Connecticut in Massachusetts. If you ever look at a real good map of Massachusetts. Really? I think Rebecca Lobo was there, which was funny because then she went to UConn and turned the whole program into this highly influential Massachusetts resident who helped UConn. Yeah, I think that's Southwick. It's just like nothing town that like was like, nah, we're not going. They drew the boundary. Anyway, I don't know. Anyway, that's our show. We didn't get to half of it, but we'll do it. We'll be back Tuesday for more. There'll be more fallout. Final playoff rankings until the real rankings and conference championship week. It's going to be a huge week. So we appreciate you sharing us on social media, listening to us. We know your time is valuable. We appreciate you including us. We will talk to you later.